Door with Sophie Black.
Hello and welcome back. I hope you all had a good summer break. It's funny now, and now I have kids and they're at nursery and stuff. It really feels like the summer suddenly ends on a specific day, i.e. them going back to school. Don't get me wrong, I was very pleased that they went back to school, but it's always a bit sad in a way as well. It's like the end of the summer, which did seem to coincide with the end of the sunshine, for Londoners anyway. My guest this week is the TV and radio presenter Kirsten O'Brien. I know Kirsten from when she used to do kind of comedy in Edinburgh at the Edinburgh Festival. So I met her over 10 years ago now. And she's just brilliant, incredibly multi-talented, has done loads of things. She did loads of kids' TV, so the younger people amongst you might remember her from Smart and CBeebies. And I also know her from doing radio, kids' radio presenting on the Big Toe Show and the Little Toe Show for those early BBC Seven listeners. That's fairly niche, but there you go. She's done loads of stuff and she's brilliant and funny. And she came in earlier this summer to talk to me, and we started by talking about the difference between the state she was in when she had her son, Fox, who is 7 years older than her twins, who are just two.
Literally, the first year was such a blur that I almost count the point at which I remember that I've got twins and life starts from their first birthday. Yeah. It was so insane, and just such a blur, because there are, I have sort of pockets of moments where I remember sitting, we've got a brilliant, brilliant nanny that I couldn't have done this without, she's amazing. Yeah. And we'd both sit, and she's a young nanny, and she would watch Catfish on the telly, which I've never seen before. Mm. But suddenly we'd both have a baby each, and I got really suckered into Catfish. Yeah. So I have these odd pockets of things that I remember. But then my memories proper, how weird is that, start from their first birthday. And then I have to remind myself with pictures for the times preceding that.
I don't think that's weird at all. I think also, I don't know about you, but I feel like my brain works in a different way. So especially in that first year, where really it's all about, it's you're working on like every minute, every hour. Mm. It's all about your short-term memory, which yeah. I imagine was probably pretty fucking shit hot. You know, it's like, have I washed that bottle? Have I done that? Where are those clothes that I put? You know, like all of that was probably really attuned. So you're just not kind of,
Well, with twins as well, there's loads of stuff. Like I'd done bits of reading, and there was like, buy two different brands of bottle. So then you know that, you know, one's always on the Chica or whatever, course. And one's on the Mams. Yeah. And I mean, so I had tons of bottles. That went out the window because they wouldn't take the teats. No. So I'm now a woman with about 40 different bottles.
Yes, I'm very happy.
And we had an app that we all, my husband, my mother-in-law, all of us were on for feeding. Yeah. Because again, when you've got two, it's like, oh God, which one was that? It's hard enough with one. Which boob was it? Blah, blah, blah. But when you've got two and all that, so we had an app for that.
Yes.
That we would work out and we could all see who did what where.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how other people cope with twins and multiples beyond, but there were certain things that I found, like apps and like those little structure things that just helped
get us through. I was just talking to someone about the difference between their second child and their first child, and obviously like it's harder because there's you suddenly have more children. But how did that, are you able to kind of, how did it compare?
Well, we never envisaged having three.
Oh.
And it was we went through IVF and it was the last chance saloon. And we had two eggs left. And I was like, well, if we don't put them both in, if it doesn't work, one man left behind, what if I'll always spend the rest of my life going, it could have been that
So you had two eggs left and one
but
more.
But I was only going to, I knew this is my, I can't do this anymore. I can't inject the drugs. My hair's gone weird.
Yeah, right.
I'm fat, I'm thin. Everything was going. And so I'd got to that point where I've tried as hard as I can. I'm done. If we only have Fox, my son, then this is cool. I've made peace with it. But there are two eggs and one go.
Yeah.
And then we got told that one of the eggs wasn't very viable. So we're like, oh, fine. So just put them all
both
in.
Yeah, and then
we know nothing got left behind. We did everything we could.
Yeah.
I am really happy calm, serene about the whole thing going forward. And then it was twins. And I spent the first few... I remember my sister-in-law saying to me, I've never seen you like this before. Because everything I came to in my mind, I was like, we're going to have to change our car, which we did.
Yeah.
We're going to have to do house renovations, which we did. Because you plan for a second. Well, so lots of cars, you can't fit three car seats across the back, mm-hmm. particularly two baby seats at a time. You can get three older ones across the back.
Yeah.
So we just got some Jeep that my husband had his eye on. Some way, it was some daft Batman Jeep that was reduced because it had been a tie-in with the film and we got it on the Jeep. So we were driving around in this Batman Jeep. And then the baby seats wouldn't fit in.
Yeah.
So it's like, right, get rid of that. Our bedroom, we didn't have any wardrobe space in our bedroom. And so we were using the spare room as wardrobe area. But then we needed that room.
Yeah.
So we had to knock a wall out to build some, you know, budge the wall along to build some wardrobe. Yeah. So just massive things had to happen.
Wow.
And then everything I came to, ridiculous things like you can't leave the country on your own with two children travel-wise under, I can't remember whether it's under one or two. So, I mean, not that I was going to plan
is that,
on.
Is that
yeah,
true?
But I was like, I can't. Then I suddenly was panicked, like, I can't leave the country.
I mean, also quite right too. Like, how the hell would you physically do that?
Yeah, but that in my mind was like, right, I can't leave the country. And so all my head was just done in with the shock of you plan for an extra one and how that might happen, but then suddenly the two. And now, of course, it's absolutely brilliant. It's the best thing ever and they're little superstars. But at the time, I just couldn't compute how we were going to cope. And then you look at these pictures of these women with these cushions and they're double breastfeeding. And I knew two twin mums and one said, I didn't leave the house for 6 months. And the other one, it was the same deal, feeding around. And I came to it, I had one go, their head skidded off the pillow and I was like, right, enough, we're bottle feeding. And that was that.
I didn't even know, and this sounds maybe, I kind of didn't even, I mean, I found breastfeeding, like I couldn't do it with one. So I can't imagine how that works with two.
Yeah, you're meant to lay them on this slopey cushion at the same time because it's all like try and get them to sleep at the same time, feed at the same time, change their nappies at the same time. And yeah, it just, they were born early. And so we had them in the special baby unit for a while.
Yeah.
And we had to live in a flat at the hospital for a little bit, which was weird.
With Fox?
No, Fox. No. This happened in the summer holidays.
Right.
Which is incredible because we had the luxury of my incredible in-laws taking him up north and looking after him while Mark and I had to move into a bizarre one-room flat in the Royal Berkshire Hospital with these two little babies.
How early were they?
They were 6.5 weeks early, so too bad.
Yeah.
But they both went into sort of ventilators, and but they sort of came up through the rooms quite quickly, and then they sort of said, right. But I tell you what was a terrifying moment, because I was thinking this on the way in to talk to you and about advice and stuff and about what's the worst thing that's anyone ever said. And I was sitting with the two babies in the glass boxes in the hospital. You used to go and sit for hours in, you know, the special baby unit. And all the medical staff came round, you know, on their walk that they do, looking at all who's getting, what's this child, what's this child. And I heard, as they were all talking about my children, they went, oh, yes, they're still being tube-fed because mum doesn't want them on formula. And I was like, sorry, what? Because both of them were being tube-fed up, you know, down their mouths. And they said, oh, yes, well, apparently you've said you only want breast milk. And I was like, hang on. In the middle of a sleep deprived, our babies have come early. I'm pumping around the clock trying to get any milk to come out of my boobs. I said, I'm going to try and breastfeed.
Yeah.
And somehow
that's been
translated into
formula.
It was pretty much 48 hours later they were out of hospital.
Wow.
Because they said, oh, yeah, well, if you'll bottle feed, we can take the tubes out. And then, you know, they were doing this. We were trying to inject my milk into the little bottles that were attached to via tubes.
Yeah, we
and so
did that too.
It was one of those moments that had I not have been at the hospital at that time and heard
you could have just been there for way longer.
I could have been there for weeks with these, you know, with me, until eventually someone maybe plucked up the courage to go, I'm really sorry, love, but this isn't going to work.
So. But also it's so weird because, like, definitely from the people that I've spoken to who've had, you know, babies in special care units and all that kind of thing, when it's not like, and it's never textbook, there's no such thing, but like when it's not and you have got to stay in hospital and there are some issues and blah blah, everyone's described it almost like dreamlike.
Yeah, it
that
is.
You know, and people saying things like, "It wasn't until 6 months after that I realised what happened."
Yeah, I had that.
You know, and so if that's a thing, like that's a thing that most people I've spoken to have talked about, then surely that's the kind of thing that medical staff around need to kind of like gently check in. You know, like, yes, you might have said, who knows, you might have said,
"Oh, I'm sure I don't
want any, you know, like, I definitely yeah. want breast milk or just breast milk." But you're in your, as you say, in your head, you're saying, "I want to breastfeed." It's not that I want tubes up my kid's
yeah.
nose.
But I didn't realise that was an option.
Yeah, no,
or
exactly.
maybe they did, you know, I have brilliant care at the Royal Box. Can't fault them
yeah.
at all. But you're right about the six-month thing, because emotionally, I think there was once I cried, and I think it was when my mother-in-law held them for the first time or something, and that, I think maybe I don't have my own mum, and that connected yeah, something yeah. in me, and that was the first time I got emotional in this whole highly stressful, tense time.
Yeah.
And now, sort of 6 months, a year later, is when it really sort of wumps, and you're like, "God, that was really scary, and that was really weird."
Yeah.
And, but we just got on with it and yeah, did it. And yeah, I'd get up yeah. in the morning and I'd have pumped, you know, through the night, because I had to do it as though every 4 hours preparing for the baby's feeds, and yeah. get up and, "Oh, I'm going to the hospital to sit for the next 4, 5, 6 hours or whatever God. It is. And, yeah, you just crack on. And it is a weird, bobbly blur if you yeah, have to go through that.
Yeah. So tell me about what made you decide to have kids in the first place?
My age. yeah, I never wanted to get married. And my husband, I mean, you can high five me for this, is 10 years younger than me. High five! Yes,
very good.
And he wanted to do the correct, "We will have a courtship, then we will marry, and then yes. we shall have a family." And I was like, "Listen, mate, I'm 10 years older. I'm not really bothered about the marriage thing, but if you want it, crack on, let's do it." And from the minute he proposed, I think we got married within 6 months. I was like, "Yeah, we're on the clock here. We're
yeah,
on the
yeah,
clock."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I had my first, I had Fox at 39.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was just, the clock is ticking. Yeah, yeah, it is yeah. really loud. I do want kids, so
yeah.
Oh wait, come on, crack on, let's get yeah. on with it. And yeah. it was that. And the weird thing was that I fell pregnant, first of all, really quickly and really easily, and then we miscarried. And this is going to sound like a weird analogy, but in the way, if you've ever gone to see a house and thought, "Oh, we really want this house," and yeah. then you don't get it,
yeah.
it makes you more determined next time Definitely. Not to lose the next
yeah,
house
yeah,
that
yeah,
you,
yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
really, really
yeah.
want to muck about. Let's Definitely. Just make them an offer at the asking
yes,
price.
Yeah, yeah,
and it
yeah.
was a bit of that we were like, "Oh, that was right, we really do want this," and it sort of galvanised everything. If there's a positive to come out of a miscarriage, yeah. then it's kind of that.
Because also it makes you imagine it, doesn't it? And so if you're yes. imagining it and it's all very positive and you can see how that's going to work,
yes,
and then it doesn't happen, then you're kind of like, "No, we definitely know. We've road tested this in our imaginations."
Yes.
And yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was totally that. And oh. and so then I fell pregnant with Fox in the December, which, again, I gave no thought. You know how some people are doing? I think Davina McCall had all of her children, didn't she, around the filming dates of Big Brother.
Oh,
and
God.
I'm like, fair play to that, because yeah. I have a Christmas baby and I clearly didn't think that through, because yeah. now the build-up to Christmas is so
it's
stressful, because I'm trying to organise a party. I invite people to Fox's party in the October, because
yeah.
it gets so
you
busy.
Want to know
I'm
that
like,
they
I need
can come.
To. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's all the birthday presents, there's the Christmas presents. And I remember he was 2 days late, and I was talking to him going, "If you get any closer to Christmas, this is your fault now. This
yeah.
is on your head. Get out. Get out." Because we just didn't think that through.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
But equally, you just, I mean, it's the last thing you think about, isn't it? And people do it in terms of school year as
yes.
well. Like, you don't want an August baby or something.
Yeah.
So you're going to, like, yeah.
Because I have that with the twins. My daughter, as it turned out, we didn't know at the time, was Breech. So we went to the hospital and they said, "Right, everything's fine. You're going to go full term." Booked me in for a 9 a.m. C-section on the 2nd of September or something. And Mark
yeah.
and I drove home going, "Oh, my word, so they're going to be the oldest in the year. Cool."
Oh, yeah.
Rang my mother-in-law saying, "I've got another 6 weeks to go," whatever it was, 4 weeks. "Can we come up to you? Because I can't cope. I'm waddling. Fox is on
yeah,
his school holidays."
Yeah, yeah.
Had them that night. I went home, waters burst, had them that night. So they're now the youngest
so they're
in the
youngest
year. They will be, yeah.
So funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's just, yeah, it's crazy how much we all just try and control the uncontrollable.
Yeah.
Like,
put respect yeah. to people that do that. I mean, actually plan it.
Do you know what? I think there's an element sometimes, my mum used to do this a little bit, where there was a lot of post-rationalisation. She was like, I did this because I thought the most sensible thing. And you're just like, did you then?
Hello? Is it a microphone?
One thing Mark and I said we were never going to do is drive a baby round in a car.
Oh, right.
I don't know why, and if you do it, that's cool. I've got nothing. But we were always like, no.
Yeah.
If the baby can't go to sleep by our means, well, we're just not getting... And the only ever time I nearly did it was in this night in a hotel in Devon last year, and I'd drunk too much.
Do you know what? I've only done it once.
Have
and
you?
It was in a hotel. It was that thing, I think, because you don't have your... You're desperate. I was just...
Yeah, no, that was it. I'd run out of means, and I was so stressed in that British way that everyone could hear this going on. And I said, right, that's it, everybody up, we're getting in the car. Yeah. And Mark went, you've had too much to drink. And I was like, dang it! And the next morning, I apologised to the woman. Oh, that was it. In the middle of all this madness, Mark had started stage whispering, twinkle, twinkle, to them while they was like, wah! And the woman, when I apologised, and I'd been screaming my head off, going, this is ridiculous. She went, well, she was a German woman, she went, well, the twinkle twinkle was a particular highlight. And I thought, my God, if she heard that.
And that was the stage whisper.
Yeah, the stage whisper bit. She heard everything. And yeah, that was them just, I mean, we had that one night in the hotel, but the Friday night to break the journey down to Devon, I'd booked some Airbnb.
Yeah.
And it was like a death trap. This woman had a doll's house in there. They were ripping bits off. We'd got these little travel cot things that basically turned into like baby zorbing. They were just pushing them over round the room and smashing into her stuff. And yeah, so they were just different babies to Fox. But so with, I would say, in Mark and I's relationship, coming back to your question, didn't change that much with Fox.
Yeah.
Now... I say having twins is like doing a just constant mathematical equation. It's who's in the most danger at any given moment and who would you save first.
Yeah.
So it's like, that one's about to be run over, that one's about to drive. I'll get the one going to be hit by the car because they can swim for a nanosecond longer, then I'll jump in
this
and save that one.
I mean, it's obviously different, but it's not totally dissimilar in that mine are a year apart. So I had two babies and it was very much like constantly making that evaluation, which is, well, that one's in physical danger, so I have to get them. That one's pulling all the books off the book. Do you know what I mean? Which is fucking annoying. But, like, that one's in physical... So you're making that... Like, no, it's not like they're both fine. No, they're both screwing up in different ways. But, like, that one, I guess, could die if they carry on doing
that.
But also, I mean, I don't know if that's the case with you, but I think it's made me... I don't think I'm an anxious person particularly anyway, but, like, I think it's made me... a much more sort of laissez-faire mum because I've kind of had to be, where you're kind of like, do you know what? They're going to have to learn to climb those stairs at some point.
Yeah.
So, you know, and right now I'm feeding her, so I cannot go up and get him.
Yes.
So he's going to just have to learn that the hard way.
And we had this whole thing being commentated by a seven-year-old. So I would say to Fox, Fox, I just need to nip to the loo. Can you watch the babies? Because I don't want to put that pressure and responsibility on him. But on occasion, I'd go, can you just mind the babies while I go to the loo? And then I'd get, Mum, they've got into the fridge and they've smashed a bottle of wine and now they're eating glass. And I'd be like, pulling my pants up. And go, oh, my God. And he would just commentate the death scenarios that were happening. Because obviously
That's
he didn't have the wherewithal at seven to wade in and start mopping up wine and picking
of course
stuff
not.
And ask that. No,
but he's like, I'm
I'm
letting you know.
Yeah.
I'm kind of useful because, you know, you wouldn't know otherwise.
Oh, he's ace, though. He's adapted to it brilliantly. He's, really good in the mix with them.
Yeah, I bet.
Apart from age gap wise, we're just getting to that stretch of, oh, soft play is perfect for nearly two-year-olds. A seven-year-old now, not so much. And it's that tug of finding something when you've got a five-and-a-half-year gap.
Keeps everyone happy. Yeah.
That everyone can do.
Yeah.
In fact, that's my life now, finding stuff that everybody can do.
Yeah.
At once.
Yeah, that's the one thing I don't have an issue. Like, that's not an issue.
Yeah, that is ideal.
Yes, although...
yes, but
having
no.
Kids a year apart... not ideal in any way.
Would you do that again?
And not in a million years.
You wouldn't.
And anyone, no, not in a million years. Yeah, I think it's just too you know the kind of like the first year of baby. I just got to the end of that and then just started it all over again.
Oh my God.
I mean,
without
it was
the time
horrendous.
To forget the horror of
yeah.
it.
Yeah, so it's like, well, you've kind of forgotten a little bit of it, but you've also, like, it's that thing of, like, the child's growing and slowly sleeping a bit more during the night, slowly dropping the feeds, eating solids, getting to one, and then you go back, and it's just like, so that was really hardcore.
Yeah,
and I would even go as far as to say that to you is kind of irresponsible, because yes, of course you don't know what's going to happen, yeah. but also if it does happen, it's quite an assault. Sadie, if you're listening to this in 20 years' time, it's like it's hardcore.
Yeah,
it's fucking hardcore.
Yeah, but then you get all the hardcore out of the way at once. Was my kind of
yeah, but it's more hardcore than. I think two windy days or a massive thunderstorm. I'd take two windy days.
What's that funny analogy?
It's a weird thing, but it's like, it's so intense. It was so intense.
Right. And I always think, at least I've got two laps. People with three, I just think, where does that third one get the love? Because I, you know, sometimes they both want on my lap. And then I managed to get an arm around Fox as well. Oh, no, what?
You said, at least I've got two laps. People with three. And I was like, who has three laps? Who are these people?
These people with three laps.
Three laps. I mean, that's got to be
dangling with the legs.
So do you know people with triplets? I don't think I know anyone.
Well,
with triplets.
When we went to have a look around the hospital yeah. and see all the facilities when you're going to have multiples, yeah. and on that I think there were 9 couples, and of the 9, there were 2 women that were expecting triplets. Jesus. That were both 2 girls and a girl. I think they were both the same. And they actually said to us on this course, they said, just to let you all know, if these 2 women go into labour at the same time you do, you two are all going to have to get shipped, the rest of you will have to get shipped out to Oxford, because right. we can only cope with these 2 women and their 6 babies if they're all come at once. So, we were sort of chatting. That's my only experience of chatting to them then, but I haven't. And also you get in there, there's a twins thing called Tamba. Twins and multiple birth associations. So you right. get the magazine, and I've read about that. They get quite uppity if they get excluded, is my, you know, if they're writing about twins all the time, and then they get all yeah. the, what about the triplets yeah. letters, quite rightly, yeah. because they've got the bigger struggle.
But now they're probably similarly like playing together and having fun together, and
yeah, they kind of are. They fight quite a lot.
Do they?
Yeah, they bite.
Yes, my kids
and
bite.
Again, Fox wasn't a biter, and so this is a whole new world
yeah,
of.
Yeah.
I feel confident leaving Indigo in soft play, but Kit, I have to hover around because he will go for other kids, and yeah. it's awful.
Yeah, yeah.
And you. And I sort of have to say, you know, mums are there and he'll approach some kid. And I now flag it up in advance. Oh, I'm really sorry, but he's a bit of a biter. And they're like, oh, don't worry. And then he'll sink his teeth in yeah, and their child's yeah. crying. And I'm kind of like, I did sort of warn you.
Yeah.
And I just, yeah, it's hideous.
I wonder if I thought about my kids. I mean, maybe they're just plain bad. But like, but maybe it's a thing about like having, you know, having a twin for your kids or for mine, like having so close together in age.
Yeah.
That, you know, things like toys and, you know, things
oh,
like
yeah.
that they're in a weird way that I would have expected them to have been kind of more chilled and able to share. But I think it actually has the reverse effect, that they're a bit more like a bit more territorial and stuff.
Yeah, and
because
it's a
there's
frustration.
A constant threat that there wasn't for Fox.
Yeah.
Or, there, you know, that actually other kids are a bit more like, oh, yeah, you can have it.
I think you're right.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
And also, Fox was a really early talker. Fox is the golden child.
Yeah.
Oh, I love them all equally, yeah. though. And the twins apparently don't talk as quickly as singles.
Right.
And so there is that frustration that they can't communicate what
yes,
they want, so they sink
yes,
their teeth
yeah,
in. And,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's a bit of a battle separating them out.
Yeah.
You can't sort of leave them for very long for fear of...
Zach goes into playgrounds and we'll just go, it's my swing, or it's my... You know, like really horribly aggressive. And I go, of course it's... everybody's swing, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? I can come in with all of that and you kind of go, I don't, I'm sure there are loads of other kids that are like that. But yeah, it feels very aggressive and territorial. And
we had a thing, we'd go and take a picture in the bluebells when the bluebells are out. And my brother had come with my nephew who is, what is he, 6 months older. I can't even think now, my brain's gone. 3 months older than the twins. And they got into a fight. My nephew and Kit got into a fight. So my brother had one arm on Kit and the other arm separating. My nephew are like this. So then he's got no spare arms. So what he didn't factor in was Indigo then came up behind with a stick and walloped my nephew on the head in defence of her brother, which of course my brother didn't have any spare arms to break that any further. Sometimes they are correctly in tune with each other. I mean, obviously not walloping another child, but she came to his defence, which was
quite
nice.
That's very funny. That's very, but also there's a part of you probably presumably that's like secretly quite proud of that.
Well, she looks out for him. He just kind of bumbles around and she will come for a biscuit and then go, okay, and take his biscuit as well. And she is always, everything is one for her, one for him. She's so always looked out for him. So we ask ourselves, is that a maternal thing at that age already?
Gosh. I think definitely Sadie's more aware of her place. I don't mean her as a woman. I mean, like, of other people around her and herself in context, I guess, than Zach. Maybe women or girls are more sociable earlier on. Like, they're aware of that someone might want that too.
I think you're right, It is interesting bringing two children exactly the same age up side by side, and we haven't done, yours is the pink cup, yours is the blue cup, any of that, yet it is happening. And I am not a girly girl, but it's happening. She is the one in the, when we go to Twins Club or whatever, she beelines for the little plastic heels, and then you just kind of watch it happen going, oh God, I actually don't have any control over this.
No.
This is just a thing.
This is an innate thing.
And that, I was sort of determined, and I am still determined to bring her up in a world where I'm going, you could be an astronaut, not a princess, you know, push that the whole time. But I'm now, I think I'm learning back from her the awareness of, oh, but you have just natural leanings towards stuff that I can't fight. And actually, how wrong would it be to fight it? So that's been quite an eye opener, having a daughter.
Yeah, and what's that saying? Is it saying that because you don't want her to sort of feel that everything has to be pink and shiny and da da da? But equally, like, pink is a colour; she's allowed to like it.
Because I went into this whole thing about, she's not going to wear pink, she's not going to do princess things, not picnics for her, not dolls. And then it's all happened. It's picnics, it's dolls, it's little heels, it's beads. She's all about the, what's it called, the accoutrements. She likes her, you know, like a handbag.
Yes.
Even goggles like on her head when we go swimming. She pops the goggles on. She just needs an accessory. That's the word.
It's that.
She's all about the accessory. And Kit just isn't.
No.
And it's just there. Yeah. And that's not me, because I'm not about an accessory or a heel or...
Yeah.
It's weird, isn't it?
It is. It's funny. Yeah, no, Sadie's like that too. Sunglasses, hats, bag, just like picking stuff on, putting it on. Yeah, you wouldn't be able
stuff.
To... Yeah, stuff. Oh, here it goes. Here it goes. So did having children change the way you saw how you were brought up, or did you suddenly think, oh no, I understand what they went through? Or
I wish, because my mum died when I was 26, and I now wish, just daft things like, Fox is really finicky about food. One week he's into the wagon wheels, and then the next week, I hate wagon wheels now. A cupboard full of wagon wheels. And I remember my mum having that frustration with it, and I just like to be able to go, oh, mum, we were divs, weren't we? And now I'm getting those moments where you suddenly have the clarity of your own childhood and what you did and what your mum was battling with, because you are replicating it with your own children. Yeah. And I find that quite sad that I can't, like, go, oh, mum, what did you do with us in that situation?
Yeah.
So there is that element to it, definitely. And, just the having your mum there for parenting quandaries, and having that... But in terms of how I mother, I mean, we're all just making it up as we go along, aren't we?
Sure, yeah.
I think my endless battle is, where is the line between being strict and being a knob about stuff? And I just sometimes Mark says I'm not strict enough, and I think I've just been the strictest mother ever. Yeah. No, really? Oh. And then that for me is my sort of panic of, I've got mates that go, we're not their friends. I don't want them to be think I'm their friend. I'm their mother and they respect. And I'm like, I kind of want to be Bessie's as well. And
so I totally buy that as a theory, that we're not their friends. We're here to teach them how to be good human beings. And I would say that to people. I'd say that's what I think. But in reality, I'm such a fucking walkover. Like, I just, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm starting to accept that now. Yeah. I think before I was like, no, I do think that. So, yeah, you think it.
Yeah.
You don't in any way put it into practice.
And also that thing as well where Mark has made a decision and he's like, I need you to back me on this. And I'm like, but I really don't believe in this, what you've said.
Really, it's hard.
Not a thing. Because I had a friend the other day who said, you've got to go through with your threats. And she'd gone to a festival with her son, and her son was really playing up. He's six. And she kept going, well, if you don't stop this, we're going to leave. If you don't stop this, we're going to leave. And eventually her sister, who was with her, said, this is no threat, because he didn't. And then they had to leave. In the middle of this festival, she had to go, her husband, we're going to have to leave. And he was like, what? And she went, we have to go through there. Yeah. And they all left.
Yeah.
So be aware of what you've threatened.
Wendy Wason was amazing about those things. And using, like, if you know you're just about to leave the festival, you say, if you keep doing that, we'll have to leave. You know what I mean? So you kind of do it where you know the thing that you actually want to do, but you make it into a thing. But the other thing she said, oh my God, this is so funny, was about... when kids were just like really pushing it and pushing it, she'd go, right, pick a toy. And they'd go, no. And she'd like, pick a toy. And they'd have to pick the toy that they want to chuck in the bin. The toy that they're going to have to let go.
Because it's weird, and I don't want to get all loved up on Wendy Wason, but I quite often think about, because her kids are brilliant.
Yeah, right.
And she's got the two older, and Riley and Fox are 10 weeks apart.
Really?
So she, when I was having my meltdown when I first had Fox, she would quite often, I'd ring her and go, I don't know what to do, and the soft play was shot, and I haven't got any friends. And she'd be like, get on the bus. Just get on the bus, come and see me.
Oh,
and she was my kind of sanctuary.
Yeah, I bet.
And she just has it nailed, hasn't she?
Yeah,
so
she really
I would
has,
listen to any words of wisdom.
Yeah, it's really good.
Open the front door and I can go out.
The only lesson that really sticks in my head that we learned, inexplicably with Fox, we used to warm his bottles. So I can remember once sitting in a car park on some enormous shopping complex thing, and I'd run into Mothercare and bought some shonky bottle warmer thing that you plug into the...
Prior
to that, I had literally had it between my thighs and under my armpits, like it was a battery to get extra life out of it. I was like, how have we got in a situation where he would only have warm milk?
Totally.
And so that was this time around. I was like, you can forget that. You get the temperature it's at, and that's what you get.
I was told that was a really good advice we were told, which is like, don't get into that.
No.
Because they don't care until they have it warm every time, and then they will only have it warm.
It was hell.
Yeah.
It was absolutely like trying to figure out in far flung places how we, when you're at a festival, how, and I'd go into coffee shops and go, can I just have, like, can I buy a cup of warm milk off you? And it was ridiculous. So we didn't do that this time.
No.
And then with the twins with bedtime, there's no time to, it's literally bath, dry, nappies on, gym jams. Yeah, right, good luck. In we all go. Because they're terrible sleepers.
Really?
They're awful. There's a woman locally, the Sleep Fairy, I think she's called, and she does this kind of thing.
Yes, I've heard of her.
Yeah, and because I do local radio, and she ended up coming on the radio and sort of giving me a bit of advice. And one of the things was, give them a protein snack before bed. And she said, like a peanut butter wrap or something. So, of course, I'm making peanut butter wraps before bed. And then Fox is going, can I have a peanut butter wrap? So now all that's happened, he says, Mum, I've just grown used to it. So I am going through wrap. My husband came home and there's like three packets of wraps. I've got like 48 wraps in the house.
We go
through a jar of peanut butter and they're still not sleeping.
Yeah,
but they're all on peanut butter wraps around the bloomin' clock.
What's the logic behind
it? To get their tummies full last thing at night so they'll sleep through, and also to try and get off, because we were in a really bad, up until about 4 months ago, we were still on like 8 bottles a night, you know, between them.
Up, down,
four of them, different times of the night, four each. So we had to get out of that because it was getting insane. But no, Kit just screams the place down, and there's no, no respite at all. I'm nearly 2 years in and I still don't get an uninterrupted night's sleep. I could sleep here now. I would happily... I'm not even kidding. If I got the dentist or something, I'm this is relaxing.
So funny, isn't it?
You've got your mouth... Or a smear. Oh, this is relaxing. This really is... Genuinely, I'm like, I don't mind. Rootle around up there as long as you need because I'm going to get a light nap in.
I fall asleep in the hairdresser
all
the time.
Yes.
I say all the time. I never go and get my hair done. But
Oh, I'd sleep anywhere.
Yeah.
I'll pull the car over if I think I'm going to be early. I'm not due back yet. I'll swing into a lay-by and just do a 20-minute.
So how long are your periods of sleep? Do you have like 2 or 3 hours and then, or is it...
So they go to bed about 7. The problem is because I get up at 5:30 to do my job.
Of course.
So the bottle that normal people would do a dream feed about 10-ish. Well, I go to bed.
Asleep. Yeah.
So I just sort of try and stash it in the corner of the cot. Kit is going through a phase of around about, and I know this because it's been pretty much every night, 9 minutes past one, will scream the house down. And I live in a semi-detached house. So there's that thing of the real me would go, I'm just letting him do this. But the me that goes, I've got neighbours and I don't know where their bedhead is in correlation to the layout of their house, gets up and starts the now. And also, just so I don't know whether I can... be heard through the walls, but I make sure they know that I'm attempting some parenting at that time of the morning, so they're not going to call social services going, this baby's just screaming through the wall.
Well, you know, I had that my neighbour, so I was David goes away a lot for work, so actually much less so now, but when the kids were young, it was quite a lot. and you know, he was away in New York for 10 days. You know, Sarah had a it was over a year ago, so I probably had like, you know, 1 year-old and a 2-year-old, or maybe a bit younger, maybe like 18 months and 6 months or whatever, and quite hardcore.
Yeah.
And I came down one morning and there was a note on my doormat from a neighbour going, I don't know if you're aware, but I can hear your children crying. And, you know, I'm recovering from an illness and... I just really need my sleep. And, you know, I just thought I'd make you aware. And it was so, like, I was so sleep deprived and it made me so angry because I just thought, yes, I am aware that my children cry, but I do, and you've got to hear me, like, I do try and...
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But it's like...
And now that's an extra level of anxiety on top.
And it took me a really long time because I do care about, like, and it also meant that we then spiraled into a really uncontrollable place because I couldn't, because up to that point, I'd done a bit of control crying, of course, because then that's how they learnt for me. That's how I felt like that's how they would learn to go to sleep. So if I couldn't do that, then I was screwed.
Yeah. And they were winning. And then,
And it's like, well, also it's like, do you know what? If I leave them to cry for 10 minutes, or not even 10 minutes, it wouldn't even be that long. But like, if I leave them to cry for 5 minutes, she'll get herself to sleep. If I don't let her cry at all, she'll never, ever get herself to sleep. And there'll be more crying generally over the thing.
Yeah, it'll perpetuate.
But just either way, I felt judged. I felt like, oh, when you say make me aware, do you mean you think I'm doing something bad to my kids? Or it was so, so horrible.
Did you talk to her about it?
I took a photo of it. I put it on Facebook and I went, I don't know what to do about it. I mean, I said, I know what I want to do about this because I was really angry. I was like, but help me not do that. So a few people wrote what they thought, and it was funny. It was very split. A lot of people with kids went, holy shit, because it was quite a sanctimonious letter and kind of went, oh, my God, I would have hated to receive something like that. And quite a few people without kids were sort of saying things like, well, you know, could you move all your bedrooms around so that they're not, you know, and all this kind of thing. And it's like, we're already miles away from her bedroom. And, and also, I don't think that's the point. Really. Like, we live in London. We live in a, you mean like we're all together. So if you and also we live on a massive, like red route A road. Like if you want quiet, you've moved to the wrong place, you know, in Brixton on a massive, like, it's, I think, the busiest, it's got the most buses of any road in the UK.
Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of thing where it's like, oh, you probably, yeah, there's my kids, but there's also the, you know, whatever. But no, eventually my godfather wrote and said, you should do what she should have done, which is go around there and talk to her in person. It's like very elegantly put. So I did. I went down. I tried to kind of swallow my anger. And I said, hi, and I'm really sorry I've kept you, you know, that we've disturbed your sleep and everything. I said, they are babies, so they cry when they want anything. And so they are going to cry. They do cry. And I don't know. Oh, I know. I'd said, this is not facetious. I've got some earplugs, that you're quite welcome to them. I don't know what else to suggest. I'm really sorry. And she just sort of stood there on the front doorstep with sort of pursed lips, going, well, I just thought I'd let you know, a bit like that. And I just thought. And then my husband, who doesn't give a shit about what anyone thinks, will go, times where kids were having tantrums and stuff, he'd go, shout to say, hello, Megan. You know, she'd written her name on the thing. I was like, don't say that, don't say that, don't say that.
You know, oh, so man. Awkward,
yeah. But I've never seen her since either. It's that kind of thing. It was like she'd moved in, she hadn't introduced herself. I didn't know. I had never met her before. I've never seen her since. I'm pretty sure she still lives there. It's very weird, very community.
Yeah, spirited.
Yeah, you think before I lived in that house, I lived in a flat where we had a guy with mental health difficulties. And he would often moan in the night. It was really noisy. And my response to that was like to go round in the day to see if he was all right.
Yeah, there's ways of doing it.
There's ways, like, well, if there's a woman there who's got kids who are crying all the time, and maybe she's beating them up, or maybe she needs some help. Maybe let's start with the need some help, and then if she's beating them up, then we can deal with that.
Yeah, that's very true. I remember before I had kids, I looked after my nephew. My sister and my brother's girlfriend at the time had said, is there any chance you can look after Dylan? And I was like, yes. And I didn't have kids. And as we came out of the gate, he fell over on the scooter on the curb and began wailing. And so my first response was, oh, no, I don't want her to hear. You know, she's just left me with him. Yeah. So I sort of managed to get him up the road a little bit, and it turned into a full-on paddy kicking, screaming tantrum in the street. Wow. And this was in Belsize Park on the curb. On the pavement, and I sort of, I must have, I don't know, seen what's that super nanny or whatever that was on at the time and thought, I know what to do here. You can't move them, because I tried to lift him and there was physically no way. He was about four, kicking and screaming. I thought, I've just got to let him play this out. And a woman came out of flats and she went, I'm finding this very distressing. And I was like, oh, I kind of am too. But the whole time I'm thinking, please don't let my brother's girlfriend hear this. Oh, my God. Yeah, and it was, and I remember when he eventually stopped, I just cried. I was like, I'm never going to be a good parent. This is terrible. Yeah, and that was somebody just wading in and saying something awful when you're clearly already in a difficult scenario.
You just
I'm like, well, I'm
help.
Finding this hilarious. In fact, I've been whacking him with a stick to keep
fun.
It going.
Yeah.
That was interesting. But why do we talk about something else now?
So you were a kids' TV presenter.
Yeah.
Did that make you, does that mean you were around kids more? Like, has that changed your idea of parenting, or was that?
No, you never really, the shows I didn't really come into contact, because Smart was filmed just in studios.
Yeah,
we would
do
Smart on the Road, where we'd go into schools and, I don't know, jazz up their school classroom or whatever. So I would come kind of into contact, but not in any sort of mothering way.
No.
So no, I don't think, and it's funny now because Fox, in fact, the other day he said, "Mummy, you famous," and our nanny, bless her, who's 22, went, "You have no idea about your mum." She went, "All my friends can't believe who your mum is," and I was like, "No, calm down, calm down." And he was like, "Really, mummy?" And I was like, "No, I'm not." But there is a funny element to the fact that I did all this kids' telly, and he has no idea.
Yeah.
My dad occasionally shows him stuff, and in fact, there was a thing came up on Twitter the other day of 15 years since Studio 9 and CBBC, and he sat, this was malingering in bed. He was like, let me watch that, mummy, let me watch it.
Yeah.
So we watched the whole 9 minutes and he watched it in silence. And then at the end he went, mummy, that puppet's in our loft in a bin bag, isn't it? And I was like, yes, because so just the hard part. And that was his response. The fact that the puppet is in a bin bag in our loft. No comment on, mum, you were on telly.
Oh,
come on, nothing
good.
Like
well
that.
Done.
No.
Yeah.
Just, where the puppet is. So,
that's hilarious.
Yeah, so it hasn't. And when I
I'd left kids telly when I was doing, yeah, I was doing sort of BBC Three stuff when I fell pregnant. And I knew it wasn't going to be like an earth mother and find suddenly my calling. This is what I want to be doing with the rest of my life, children.
Yeah.
And so I had that panic that I've heard loads of people on this podcast say before, particularly in our freelance line of work. And straight away, I think it was week two, I got offered Big Brother's Big Mouth to go on that.
Yeah.
And there is a moment after you've given birth where you... In the same way that babies do, you lose weight and you look a bit brilliant for, I don't know, a fortnight afterwards. And then it all goes to dog dirt again.
Yeah.
And I managed to get on telly in that window and look brilliant and look like I was hashtag winning at life and all of those things. And then after that, it was, oh, God.
That's really?
Yeah. And it just all went. And so for a tiny second, I thought, oh, God, I've got this. Yes, yes. I can go back to it. And then at 10 weeks, I did Let's Dance for Sport Relief.
Did you?
Yes. Now, this is ridiculous because, again, I was like, well, I've got a career. I've got to get back into it.
Yeah.
And so I found myself, like, crouching behind a desk trying to pump because I was still desperately trying to breastfeed, trying to pump while all these dancers waited. I was dressed as Van Halen. Oh, God. It's so...
And Fox was 10 weeks.
He was 10 weeks old. Mark had him at home, but I was pumping the milk. And I remember I had to go for my costume fitting and I was like, right, everything's leaking. So that's my main... I don't want to be on BBC One with things leaking.
Yeah.
So I want pants on pant pad, on pants, on if there is those kanga pant things. I want the whole works.
Yeah.
I want bra on, breast pads on, second bra on. Yeah, that was my number one fear. Please don't let me be on BBC One and I've weed myself.
Yeah.
Oh, because my God. Fergie's been there. She's done that.
Yeah.
And then this routine. And I'd had a C-section. I was learning this routine, pumping, exhausted, got to keep my career going. And my neighbour at the time in Camden, Joe, was still very friendly, is a doctor. And I remember going back and saying, oh, gosh, Joe, they want me to do a backflip. And she's like, oh, now, you shouldn't really be backflipping 10 weeks after a C-section. That's not ideal. So I went back the next day and said, I've had some medical advice and I'm not supposed to do a backflip after a C-section. And they went, oh, right, don't worry. We'll get the lads to flip you. And if you see that, they do. They throw me. So, so that I'm not doing the full backbend.
Oh, my God.
The solution... God. Was to
we'll have some people throw you in the air.
Flip me. And so it's god awful if you ever see it on YouTube.
I mean, I'm going to go straight home and look it up, obviously.
Off my face.
I'm already like, okay, I need to make a note. I definitely need to Google this.
So that was 10 weeks after I gave birth, trying to have it all. And
that's a very good, the way you describe that is really spot on, I think. Where you kind of go, oh yeah, I've had this baby, but everything's back to normal and I'm ready for work and it's all fine. Nothing's changed.
Yeah.
And backflipping your way around a studio. Like, what was the point at which you kind of went, oh, actually this isn't going to work, or how I need to kind of redefine the balance of things?
I don't think there was a point.
Right.
I think I was just, I knew that I didn't want to be at home a full-time mum, and I needed to find the balance. And in this game, there isn't a balance where you can go, well, I'll go back into my job 2 days a week and do the, you know, easing back into it. Or what do they call them? Getting to know your days or whatever. Yeah. You allow whatever the heck that is. What are they? Touching base days or whatever.
When you are on maternity leave and then you go back,
yeah, you allow like 10 days. Keeping in touch days or something. There isn't that in our line of work. I couldn't just... Hello, well, one show. Can I do a Keeping in Touch film, please?
Yeah, I was kind of like, because I was obviously, the same and sort of working, but mostly doing voiceovers and kind of going, so I guess that voiceover is that Keeping in Touch day. I kind of worked it out so that I used my Keeping in Touch days to just go in and work.
And it took me a long time. And in fact, when was it? A year and a half before I got the heart job, which was doing heart breakfast radio. But that was a whole struggle of me going, I can't not work ever again. And also that whole thing of, well, what am I going to do instead? And coming to terms with, oh, I just really like what I do, and I just want to keep on doing what I do. And there isn't anything else I want to do.
No.
And it would have been wonderful if I'd decided I want to be a florist or a midwife or something, but actually, I just really enjoy,
but also,
and it's the only thing I can do.
A lot of the reason why people then have career changes once they've had kids is that they can't do the job that they do, that they did with children, and still vaguely see those kids and be part of those kids' lives.
Yeah.
But actually, with what you do, that is possible.
Yeah, I would say the only thing that's amended is because Mark is away a lot as a director, so I do less telly, because in telly it is, you know, we're on an overrun, we're going to be here till 10 p.m. now, and
which you can't
do that.
Yeah.
So radio makes more sense, voiceovers make more sense. And in fact, when I had the twins, I do the voiceovers on Sky One, and I went back, I had them in the August, and I went back in the October. But that was because you sit in a dark room by yourself.
Yeah.
I could have a hot meal.
Oh,
I'm effectively watching telly and just pressing a button and going, more Simpsons now on Sky One. Every half hour, I was like, I can't get back there quick enough.
Yeah.
Because that was like a different environment.
Yeah,
I mean, if there'd have been a bath there, I would have had a bath as well. And even a shower actually would have done. So, yeah, that was... But I do have that terror of, I like working, and I don't want to not work.
No.
And I do think, I know, was it Lucy on your podcast was saying, or maybe it was Sarah Soleimani, that it makes you a better person for working, because you're a better person to
be
around.
Well, I think it's
you're
whatever
satisfied.
Your version is. So, like, obviously most of the people that I have on are workers, because that's how...
We know each other.
First of all. And also, I sort of thought, well, if I was listening to this podcast, I'd be interested in people who've had some kind of public profile, so that you're kind of like, I mean, I could, and actually I've interviewed all kinds of different people, but like kind of makes it maybe more interesting. So that's what I've sort of assumed. So yeah, so they are, everyone tends to be workers. But I think that equally there are people who feel happier with being a stay-at-home mum,
and that's
in
fine.
Which case that's also fine.
Yeah.
But it's like whatever makes you the happiest and the better, you know.
Because
it
must be as awful if you know your maternity leave's coming to an end and you have to go back to your job. It's the same
and
mindset,
but
just flipped.
Exactly. And I know lots of people like that who I sort of got to know when Zach was a baby, who sort of then had to go back to work, and we're just really down about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel definitely doing this and talking to all of us a lot, you just think we're so lucky to do things, A, that are that we really like doing, so that actually the more I do this kind of stuff, the more fun and happier I am with my kids.
Yeah.
You know, and if I wasn't, I wouldn't, you know, and all this kind of thing. But the same for those people, you know, if they're not, you know, anyway.
Yeah, if they're not satisfied, that's sad.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, yeah. What advice would you give to someone who was just about, maybe was pregnant with twins?
Oh, with twins.
Or with their first child.
Well, I've listened to all of your podcasts and all of the brilliant advice. So I was trying to think of something a little bit different. So I've got like a cheesy one and a practical
one. Go for
it. And the practical one is, get a pushchair with space underneath, for God's sake. You are going to need to get everything under there. So all these nonkey, oh, look at this. It's a, I don't know, it's a traditional pushchair and it's got a parasol. No, forget that. How much space can you stash stuff underneath? That's all that matters.
Yes.
So that is like
really
my practical piece of advice. Because we had, and if you're interested, an upper baby. And it was amazing.
Did. Yeah.
Oh, it was like a supermarket trolley in there.
Yeah, it was
good.
Everything.
It was quite funny. I remember the downside of this was my husband's computer broke and he took it to the Mac shop at Westfield. And then we went and collected it when it had been all super duper repaired. And I put it in the area under the pushchair.
Mm.
And then we got back to the car and I'd sort of gone round and sat in. Well, I put Fox in his car seat, strapped him all in and was sitting. And Mark was around the back of the car going, I was sort of aware of him smashing the push. Couldn't get it to fold. Couldn't get it to close. Smashing and Yes. And eventually he got in the car and he went, where's the computer? And I was like, did you not take it? And he basically, and it was the funniest thing, because it's the only time I've seen my husband, he was jumping on all fours in this car park and I was going, no, no. And he basically
opened the pushchair back up, clutched the computer, went back into the Mac shop and just had to put it back on the counter and hand it back in because he'd shattered the screen. He was mashing the pushchair down trying to get it to close. So do check what's in that under compartment before you put it in the back of the car.
That is another bit of advice.
Yes, and then I think my sort of cheesy bit of advice, which I try and remind myself all the time, is say yes. You know, like if they want a kitchen disco, pump the music up, say yes, do it, because you're not going to go, God, I wish I'd unloaded the dishwasher more before on time, you know, 6 o'clock, or just say yes to all the stupid stuff, because that's the bit you're going to look back and go, I was the div that didn't dress up as, you know, Wonder Woman meets somebody in a fez, because we always seem to have fezzes on in our house. Somebody's always wearing a fez. You know, do that, silly, say yes. And I think that, I don't know whether that comes from losing a parent or not, but you want those times and that, the actual, you know, do the stuff. Don't worry about the other crap.
No.
Do the stuff.
Yeah.
Say yes.
Such a lovely bit of advice from Kirsten O'Brien. I've thought a lot about that since I recorded this. Haven't always put it into practice, I have to be honest, but very good advice to remember all the same. Next week, I'll be talking to the actor Sam Spruill, who has been in films such as To Kill a King, London to Brighton, The Hurt Locker. He was in Luther. He played the young army guy who sort of went rogue. He's brilliant. Anyway, he's very interesting too. We went on and on and on, so it's going to take me ages to edit it, but in a good way. So tune in for that. Also, if you enjoy this podcast, it would hugely help if you rated it and subscribed and did all that stuff on iTunes. You just click on the podcast on iTunes and you can subscribe or rate it. That would be really wonderful and would help me a lot. I hope you have a good few weeks and I'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.